Welcome back. You're listening to Morning Ireland on a special programme which we're devoting entirely, obviously, to the life and work of Albert Reynolds, former Taoiseach. And because of that, we're not going to bring you sports news for, I think, understandable reasons this morning.
But we can speak to another former Taoiseach. John Bruton is on the line. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning.
Now, obviously, you were Taoiseach in the 90s as well. There was great sparring between Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, much coalition, much debate in politics about the shape of politics and how governments would be formed from here on in, and we have a legacy of coalition since. How do you assess the politics at the time when Albert Reynolds was working hardest in Dáil Éireann?
Well, it was quite constructive, really, because we did achieve a lot in that time. We laid a foundation for very rapid economic growth, and also we succeeded in resolving the conflict of allegiances in Northern Ireland. So I think politics worked. But before saying more about that, I'd like to say how very sad I am to learn that of Albert's death. We were obviously political rivals and of different parties, but he was always a kind man. He never said anything nasty to me and always was welcoming whenever I met him, as I did not too long ago. And I know how devoted he was to Kathleen and the family, and our thoughts must all go to them at this stage. Assessing his particular contribution, another former Taoiseach said a minute ago, the negotiation of the Downing Street Declaration was absolutely crucial. And that involved not just the SDLP, which usually was talking to the Irish government, but the unionist community were also brought along in the negotiation of the Downing Street Declaration. And that meant that it was a foundation upon which successive governments on both sides of the Channel could build to create the peace that we now enjoy.
In relation to relations with Downing Street at that time, Albert Reynolds would have obviously had a close involvement there. How difficult were they? How was Britain moving, if you like, that bit closer towards some level of amelioration in the North?
Well, in a sense, what we were trying to do was, on the one hand, persuade the Sinn Féin and the IRA that the use of violence was not going to achieve anything. And therefore, we had to create a framework where they could share power, if you like, in Northern Ireland with the unionist community, which involved winning the trust of the unionist community. And what the Downing Street Declaration did was create a structure in which that could be done. And that is, I think, an enduring legacy of Albert Reynolds. And I've always regarded that as very helpful to me in what I did in the peace process subsequently, and no doubt it was helpful to Bertie Ahern.
And yet Albert Reynolds once famously reportedly accused you of being John Unionist.
Well, look, I don't think that was a slip of the tongue. He probably thought it at the time, but I don't think he meant all that much harm by it. My concern always was to ensure that you had the unionist community on board as well, and that the unionist community would feel that they could trust Dublin as they could trust London. And indeed, if we were ever to have a united Ireland, you would have to get a situation where the unionists trusted Dublin more than they trusted London. We haven't achieved that, of course, and we probably won't, but we had to bring both sides along, otherwise there wouldn't be a process and there wouldn't have been a result. We now have power sharing operating in Northern Ireland, as it did under Sunningdale, but now on a basis where everybody accepts it, where some people didn't accept it at the time of Sunningdale.
One aspect of Albert Reynolds' tenure in office that we haven't discussed too much, but of course it directly led to your assuming office, was his political downfall, Brendan Smith, the Harry Whelehan affair. For those not familiar, can you just give us a reprise of what happened?
I'm afraid I don't remember all the detail of that. It was a breakdown in communications or trust between the two parties in the then government, Fianna Fáil and the Labour Party, over a variety of issues where they didn't feel that they were dealing fairly with one another. And the result of that was that the Labour Party decided that it couldn't continue in office with Fianna Fáil, but that they could form a government with the Democratic Left and Fine Gael, which they did. I, I, the detailed ins and outs of it or something that I'm sure we'll write a book about sometime, but I don't remember.
His problems with yours and Fine Gael's opportunities. In some respects, he served a relatively short tenure as Taoiseach. Should he have served a longer period? In other words, things went badly wrong. But when he came to office, you had a sense in the country that this was a man who would be around for quite a considerable length of time.
That's right. I mean, within the Fianna Fáil, he bridged all the different factions within Fianna Fáil. He sort of was a representative of a range of opinion within the party, which is, I think, good. But he achieved an awful lot in the time that he was there. It's not the length of time you serve, but the contribution you make that's important.
John Bruton, former Fine Gael Taoiseach, former Taoiseach of the country, leader of Fine Gael, thank you very much for joining us. The time is 12 minutes to 9 o'clock.
And we're joined now by somebody who knew Albert Reynolds well as an observer of his life and his work, journalist and broadcaster Livy O'Leary. You're very welcome. He was a controversial figure, a very constructive figure, obviously, in relation to the Northern Ireland peace process. Somebody who served a very short time in government and played a fairly significant role in bringing about the collapse of two governments. So, in the round, how do you remember him?
Well, the very things that made him made it possible for him to bring about the truce were the things that in the end brought him down. Sometimes it's the right man in the right place, but he may only be there for a short time. He was unsentimental. He made deals. That's what he did as a businessman. And I remember talking to him after the ceasefire and asking him about it. And he said, one thing in business, he said, you keep your eye on the rabbit. And he kept saying this, you keep your eye on the rabbit. And he's right. He kept following the deal. Unlike Haughey, who may have been more conscious of pursuing his position as constitutional leader and the cause of constitutional nationalism, Albert wanted to stop the guns, and that was his absolute focus. And the wonderful thing about him, as you know, he was a garrulous man. He would talk forever. It was brilliant. He'd chat away to you on the phone. But in that period, he kept quiet, and not even his two coalition partners, first O'Malley and then Dick Spring, knew totally what was going on and that Martin Manser was talking to the Provisional IRA. But he was practical. He, for instance, Charlie Haughey'd had a terrible relationship with the President, Mary Robinson, on Haughey's side, that was. But Albert said, I remember talking to him, and he said, listen, you know, she's a good little pony. Let her off. Let her go to Northern Ireland and shake Gerry Adams' hands. Sure, I mean, what harm will that do? It's only for the good. But I remember the description of Mary Robinson as a pony will stick with me forever. He was stubborn. I mean, his refusal to withdraw the word dishonest in the whole...
This is what he said about Des O'Malley. His tarnisher from the Progressive Democrats.
Exactly, in the whole Beef Tribunal process. All he had to do was withdraw that word dishonest. But he wouldn't do it. And, you know...
And his government collapsed as a result.
And his government collapsed. And I remember sitting in the press gallery looking down the day before he actually resigned. He made a shambling speech. There were bits of paper everywhere. But it was the first time I had seen Albert not being cocky. Cocky was what Albert was. And suddenly he was shambling. And on the day he left, he looked up at us in the press gallery and he said, you jump all the big ones. It's the little ones that trip you up. But I remember my husband, who was an economist, was asked by every single Taoiseach at some stage to act as economic advisor to them. And he said no. He said the only one he would have done it for was Albert Reynolds, and Albert didn't ask him.
And his ability to make deals and to work towards them, obviously the Northern Ireland peace process, obviously outstandingly, but it stood him in good stead. He could break deals and smash them up as he did in large measure in two governments, but to make deals where it mattered in the party, in the country, in Europe?
Yes, absolutely in Europe. And, you know, the 8 billion or as near as makes no difference was actually structural funds from Europe. He managed to do that. But, you know, on the other side of that, he was determined for us to track the Deutschmark. That was pure stubbornness. It made no sense for us to do that at all.
We're talking about a time we had our own Irish pound.
We had our own Irish pound. But, you know, mortgagees were finding they were paying interest rates of, what was it, 15, 16%. I mean, it was mad stuff. And Irish exporters were screaming. But because Albert wanted to show what a good European he was, and because he wanted to stay tracking the Deutschmark, he did it even though the Germans were telling us to back off. And Bertie Ahern didn't want to do it, because I remember talking to him at the time. But Albert kept this up. But one memory I'll always have, Cathal, was of dancing with him at a charity do.
Tell us more.
He was brilliant. You suddenly remembered, you know, that Albert was the country and western king. And I think it was in the Shelburne, it was a charity do, and I got out on the floor to dance with Albert. He was the most wonderful dancer. Smooth, determined, and he danced all night. He wouldn't take a drink, but he danced all night. But he never forgot who he was. He never forgot that he started as a porter in a CIE station, I think it was in Ruski. You know, all of what he had been, the businessman, the country and western king, that all was brought in to how he conducted himself.
And he got into terrible trouble for saying it, though I think I know who it was. You might know. When he said, that's women for you.
Yeah.
Which is completely untypical of the man. He got on very well with women in his own family in general.
Well, he did. And it was Nora Owens that he was aiming this at for. And, you know, that was the sort of country background as well, that he didn't realise what trouble he was getting himself into. And he knew he'd made a terrible mistake, but he laughed it off. But yeah, that's who he was. You know, you got it on varnish.
Stay with us, because we're also joined by somebody who knew him from close in as an advisor, Dr. Martin Manzer. Good morning.
Good morning.
Looking back on the man, his style and his achievements, what do you make of Albert Reynolds?
Well, I think the achievement was huge. You wouldn't have got the rest of the peace process without a ceasefire. And I think, you know, one of the very courageous decisions he made was to open, or more precisely, reopen a back channel to the Republican movement. And indeed, a little later on, a line through to the loyalist military command. I mean, with all due respect, you know, no matter what his relationship with John Major, unless he had been able to convince the hard men on both sides that there was a better way, and that he could lead them towards that, then there wouldn't have been any ceasefires. And then the other thing, which I don't think has been mentioned so far on your program, I mean, he did, of course, form the first, but not necessarily the last, Fianna Fáil Labour coalition.
Fair to say that his work in bringing about the peace process and bringing about the IRA ceasefire 20 years ago this month was at times a lonely one, lonely to the extent that even his own cabinet weren't in on it.
Well, he knew he had to be extremely discreet, which didn't come naturally to him, because he was naturally a fairly garrulous person. He liked to be talking to his friends, but he was very careful what he said to others. There would have been, of course, some written communications which some civil servants would have been privy to, but he couldn't let on that there was a direct line of contact. But of course, without the direct line of contact, it would have been impossible to bring into place, because it was a question of building the necessary degree of trust, and that couldn't be done at a distance.
Briefly, why do you think somebody who achieved so much 20 years ago this month played a major role in the collapse, not of his first coalition government, but of his second, so that his career as Taoiseach only lasted 2.5 years? Why was that?
He was certainly very macho, but I mean, there are or have been other macho people in the Dáil. I also think that perhaps what he was doing wasn't fully appreciated, perhaps because of his background. I mean, Conor Brady, who was editor of the Irish Times, has gone on the record and considers that the Irish Times was unfair to him. And I do think it was, I mean, if you'd asked me what was the major political tragedy of my life, and that would have been the collapse of the Fianna Fáil Labour government. While accepting that it may have been you know, more his fault than others. Nonetheless, it shouldn't have been allowed to happen, and you know, it did contribute to sort of throwing the peace process off track. Oh, well,
I'm afraid we'll have to leave that very briefly, Olivia Leary.
Yeah, I mean, Martin has reflected that stubbornness. He was an extraordinary Taoiseach in terms of making a deal with the Labour Party. Do you remember the longest love letter in history when he made his presentation of conditions to them? They couldn't turn it down. But then in the end, he was just so stubborn. He couldn't stop himself time and again in his life because he was stubborn, wouldn't back down. He tripped himself up.
Olivia, thank you.
Yes, and thanks, Cathal. We've just had a statement in from the Taoiseach Enda Kenny. We are talking about events of a generation ago. Albert Reynolds says, Enda Kenny, and he's talking about the period 88 to 91 when Albert Reynolds was Minister for Finance, brought an energy and drive to the development of business and economic growth during his tenure as both Minister for Industry and as Minister for Finance. And then moving forward a few years, the period 1992 to 94, when he was Taoiseach, he says he played an important part in bringing together different strands of political opinion in Northern Ireland, and as a consequence made an important contribution to the development of the peace process, which eventually led to the Good Friday Agreement, which we, of course, we live with the legacy of now. We can go briefly to our Midlands correspondent, Ciarán Mullooly. Albert Reynolds, of course, was a TD for Longford, Roscommon. Ciarán, good morning to you. You've been getting some reaction.
Yes, indeed, Christopher. Albert Reynolds will be quite rightly remembered for his legacy in terms of the peace process in the coming days. But this morning, it's his work and his tremendous work over the years as an employer in the Midlands that has been talked about most. Because people may not know that he had an extraordinary career in business before politics. He worked, he bought a bacon plant in the Dublin Liberties. He owned C&D Foods, obviously, in Longford. He had a cinema. He became a publisher of the Longford News. But it was with C&D Foods that he had perhaps the most impact on the most number of people in the region, because he employed over 1,000 people at one stage. In his autobiography, he refers in one chapter to the fact that getting into Sainsbury was the part that made him. To be able to sell an own label pet food to Sainsbury was critical. And he employed people from throughout the Midland region. He gave jobs when there were no jobs from 1971 onwards for 10 years. But of course, this morning, finally in Longford, politics is of course to the forefront. And the people who worked with him when he became firstly a TD and then a Taoiseach are talking about him. People like Peter Kelly, the Fianna Fáil TD, who succeeded him, describes him this morning as the best Taoiseach of our times, the man who brought peace to Ireland. But finally, one of his great friends, one of the people who was with him throughout the way, Benny Reid, a Fianna Fáil activist down through the years, I spoke to him a few moments ago. He said this morning, history will be kind to Albert Reynolds, even if at some stages his own party was not. Just a little flashback there to some of the things that happened in the Fianna Fáil at the end of his career in politics. And Benny concluded by saying, Albert played a very honourable part in Irish life. He certainly was no coward.
Ciarán Mullooly, Midlands correspondent, thank you for that. It is 9 o'clock, and that was Ciarán reporting from Albert Reynolds' constituency, Heartland. We'll take a short break.
It's nearly 9 o'clock on RTE Radio 1. Time to check out Toyota, the most reliable car in Germany in a survey of 8 million cars. Toyota, the best built cars in the world.
We're sorry. Sorry for the car crashes, smashes and bashes. Sorry for the flooded living rooms, the floating sofas. Sorry for the bad actors, the crocodile tears, the overdramatic wails. We're sorry that so often fear is used to sell insurance. At 123.ie, we have decided enough is enough. We promise we won't use fear to sell. We don't need fear or shock tactics to sell our insurance because we have excellent customer service, great value and exceptional policies. No fear, just insurance you can count on. 123.ie 123 Money Limited, trading as 123.ie, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Welcome back. Our editors this morning, Cathy Farrell and Michael O'Kane. Richard McCullough was on sound. The broadcast coordinator was Claire Murray.
In the years before Albert Reynolds became Taoiseach in 1992, he was a frequent guest in the Morning Ireland studio. He lived nearby, which was a help, and he often answered awkward questions about controversies that had nothing to do with his ministerial brief. So we'll remember him for that. But of course, anyone who knew him, anyone who lives in this country will remember him for many other reasons, both good and also some of them controversial. There'll be a lot to talk about on programmes throughout the day, beginning or continuing with Sean O'Rourke at 10 o'clock. But We remember Albert Reynolds on the morning that he died, and we remember the fact that we live on the peaceful island he did so much to create. That's more than enough.